From the Watson Institute at Brown University, this is Trending Globally. I'm Sarah Baldwin. The past 18 months have been a strange time for art lovers. Museums and galleries have sat empty. Artistic communities have, like all of us, learned to live in isolation. At the same time, though, we've seen a revolution in how we think of public space in our cities and towns. Streets, parks, even alleyways have turned into our storefronts, our classrooms, and our museums. What do these changes mean for the art world and for art's relationship to the rest of the world? On this episode, we're going to look at some of the ways the art world has changed over the past few years and at its relationship to larger political and cultural issues, from Black Lives Matter to COVID-19. We've had artists on Trending Globally before, but for this topic, we wanted to hear from the people who help connect and promote artists and bring them into conversation, curators. To do that, we partnered with Providence Curates. Providence Curates is a nonprofit made up of artists, writers, and curators based in Rhode Island and nearby Massachusetts. This conversation was put together as part of PVD Fest Ideas, an arts and ideas festival in our hometown of Providence, Rhode Island. To start, I have in the studio Judith Tolnick-Champa. Judith is a contemporary art curator. She was the co-founder of the Providence Biennial and is one of the founders of Providence Curates. Judith, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
So Judith, you reached out to us at Trending Globally about a collaboration looking at visual arts through a socio-political lens and exploring the process that brings art into the public. What made you interested in this kind of collaboration?
Well, I'm a big fan of Trending Globally first. I love how your show looks at politics through a bunch of different angles: history, culture, the social sciences. Providence Curates often deals with political questions through the arts, so we thought it would be great to have a conversation together.
Providence Curates specializes in something you call activist curating. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. We bring together works by artists that explore and pursue themes like social and environmental justice. At the same time, we aim to be good citizens. We see art as community building. We do that by creating thoughtful but bold exhibitions and by connecting with people seeking to learn the practice, what I call the art of curating.
So Judith, you brought together three people of different backgrounds with very different experiences in the visual arts to talk about all of this. Could you introduce them briefly?
Sure. I'm pleased to do that. Two board members of Providence Curates appear on today's podcast, Spencer Evans and Johnny Skye. Spencer was born in Houston, Texas, and is currently a drawing professor at RISD. A practicing artist, he works in drawing and painting, sculpture, illustration, and public art. Johnny is from Beaverton, Oregon. She attended Brown and RISD and founded the Skye Gallery in Providence in 2017. It was a contemporary art gallery whose mission was to challenge the dominant narrative. Their conversation was led by Malaine Ferdinand King. She's a fourth-year doctoral candidate in Africana Studies at Brown. Her work explores aesthetic expression and political action in the 21st century. They started by unpacking that pesky word curation, a word your listeners might know has something to do with museums and galleries. But there's more to it than that. Here's Malaine, Spencer, and Johnny.
Johnny and Spencer, thanks so much for coming on this podcast.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Malaine.
Thank you for having us.
You both talk about being very community-oriented and trying to assist the new generation of artists into creative spaces. And I wondered if you could just speak a little bit more about what you mean by curating or what you mean by being a curator and about what it actually means to curate a space.
For me, curating is about discerning around a visual language that support an expansion of an idea. It's not about choosing what's good or what's bad. It's not about judgment. It's not about just hanging artwork on a wall. To me, the power of curation is actually being purposeful about bringing a variety of voices, content, expressions, angles through visual language together in the same space to challenge us.
I agree with that as well. I'm gonna simplify the way I see it. I see curating as like a reflection of one's vision, the way someone sees this world and also how they want this world to be seen from their perspective. I think we're all curators in one way or the other. We curate what our outfit will be. We kind of curate what our plans will be for a day or a season. And so in that sense, whether we're talking about something that most people just see as like a regular occurrence, in the art context, curating comes from somebody's vision.
Yeah, I want to build on what you're saying a little bit. I think, you know, wherever people are deciding what's going on, there's curation involved, right? And really, it's about utilizing the opportunity to make choices to create different kinds of conversations. And sometimes that is about a self-reflection entirely. And sometimes it's about saying, if I care about social justice or the earth or, you know, what we're dealing with as humanity, and I feel like this is a way to get humanity around the table, I want to make sure that all kinds of voices, not just who the people are, but even the way the marks are made or the work is crafted or the way the message is addressed. So that to me, it's that kind of multiplicity, that kind of curating can be like making the soil fertile for an experience that you can't predict, but that can hopefully challenge and complicate and bring love for humanity into a room.
You both already touched on it a bit, but I would say that in this moment, we are in a very precarious and contentious situation where I feel like people are tiptoeing around what to say about social justice, about how do we actually convey social meaning in a way that can be communicated to people in an accurate and a socially responsible way. So can you speak a little bit about why curating is especially important at this moment, especially in this way that we're thinking about the arts as something that has sociopolitical consequences? And how does curating convey social meaning in a very intentional and meaningful way?
I kind of want to piggyback off of one of the things you were just saying, this idea of bringing different perspectives together. If we're talking about curating and thinking about, you know, social issues or just things that are going on like in our environment based off of how we interact with each other, I would call that like the rigor within curating. And that comes from seeing things from different perspectives. In order to do that, it's going to take these different perspectives, but try to find where those intersections show up. In order to get that clear view, we are going to have to talk about and like highlight some of the things that do keep us from being in that connected space. And so that's where that high level curating comes from, where the rigor in there is like, okay, how do we find where we all meet each other?
I think even as a curator individual, you know, whatever the lens is, even if it's a collaborative group, there is a lens, and being aware of that lens is the only real way to transform or betwixt, you know, the common narrative. And I think this is where visual language has so much power, is that we get locked in words and quips and one-liners, and even conscious progressive people will repeat, you know, things that don't mean anything because it's in the common narrative. But I do believe that visual language breaks us out of some of these cognitive containers that keep us from really understanding things more complexly. And I think high level curation, in addition to what you're saying, is also about knowing that you don't know, you know, and being really open to a journey and an experience with the work. So I guess I'm just saying that collaborative work, when you're talking about a major curatorial experience, is very useful, especially when that group, you know, starts like what you're saying, Spencer, with an active and honest conversation about lens and value and, you know, what's good and bad and why those things are not really part of a good, healthy curatorial practice.
Johnny, I think about what you're saying about collaboration, and I think it has to do a lot with the relationship between curating and culture. And what I hear you saying is that collaborative curating shifts our focus toward process and being in community with one another and gathering and thinking about what we can create out of those gathering spaces instead of the end result or that end product. And I think if we are to be meaningful and have meaning for a broader social spectrum, we have to do away with these myopic perspectives and these cut and dry notions of objectivity towards more inclusive frameworks. And I think collaboration and diversity in curating really does help us question who is in the room when we're creating, when decisions are being made, who can speak or act, who has the power to speak and act, and who can access these social, cultural, and economic resources, and who actually can say, okay, this is what is important and this is what I want to present to this community.
Right. There's always a sense, and what I always got at the gallery were folks coming through saying, I don't know how to draw, I don't know how to make, or I don't know how to experience this space. And I think what we're talking about in terms of transformative practice and curation is hopefully breaking down some of those value systems as well. It starts with being conscious, clearly, but it's essential, I think, if this work can actually do something different than what we already know.
I think now it's really important to start talking about ethics of the art world and the curating world. And I wanted to ask you both if you felt that curators have an ethical responsibility, and how do we continue to center and further ethically sound approaches to the project or the practice of curating?
I definitely find ethics to be a huge part of it. But on the other end, because like, I don't want to say that, you know, all art should be, you know, all art shows should be about this specific thing. And for the next 12 years, everybody needs to be included in every single thing, because if that's not what your actual truth is or what you actually study, then you could end up maybe doing more harm than you thought you were going to do. And try, because it'll end up being a bunch of folks virtue signaling, which we're already seeing a lot of right now.
Right.
So what I will say is that folks who say they are about inclusivity and equity actually be about that. And if you say that, oh, I'm going to make this show, I want to curate a show that says something about who the creatives in this community are and what they're bringing to the culture of Providence in particular, to the culture of whatever place they're in, then you would do the work to make sure that that's actually being represented, and not just from your view. But if you're not doing that, then don't say that that's what you're here to do. And that's what I feel about the ethics of curating, because I feel like it can be a lot more simple than folks try to make it seem.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things we know in Providence is that people work with the people that they know. There are so many creatives here, and it'd be really easy to pull together a show of the artists that I know that are making work that I think is really fascinating and brilliant. And then we get into other kind of camps and fissures and equity issues. A network is an equity issue, right? Our exposure to folks and to people is an issue, and it varies. So the idea of pushing outside of what you know and being responsible to that is certainly an ethical issue. I think Providence has done an amazing job the last 30 years of really saying everybody's voice matters. You know, what ASU20 has done in, you know, with their programs and on jury curated spaces really is important for folks to feel like they can engender an experience without judgment, which is the antithesis of, I think, what we're talking about when we talk about curating. At the same time, there's really a lack of opportunity for dynamic interaction with what people are making. I think what we're trying to engender is a way of being really purposeful to complicate ideologies, not just to tick some boxes, and not without consciousness of one's own place in the world.
Yeah, Johnny, I think you're exactly right, especially when you're thinking about Providence. It's known for its cultural diversity in terms of its people, the many traditions that make the city come to life. I think what Spencer said about representation is really important, but also the value system is extraordinarily important. It's not just about representation, but it's also about what are the values of a people? How do we make this message personal? How do we have very individualized discussions about what does this story, what does this message mean to a culture, to a community, to a history that sometimes has often been forgotten, especially when we think about many of the indigenous communities that are in the city. I think Providence does a very good job of presenting itself as a very small but rich city that has many stories with global relevance. And Johnny, you already talked a little bit about some of the contemporary art experiences here that is in the city that reflects or celebrates a certain truth, whether it's in relation to some of the Black and Brown communities here, some of the more structural issues that the city is currently facing, some of the issues with public art. And so I wanted to ask Spencer, did you have in your past 2 years any experiences with some of the art spaces here that you felt either reflected, you know, a certain message that you were looking for, that you think reflected the history of a community, or maybe are there ways that Providence still yet hasn't activated a certain truth or potential?
Okay, yeah, sure. Johnny mentioned AS220, and just in my couple years of being here, and as we talked about this as well, as like socially, I guess I've only been here for like a year, because last year almost doesn't count. But in that time, there's been a few people that I've linked up with, and also some events that I've gone to. One place in particular, a place called Public Not Private. And they're a Black and Latinx owned community space, as well as a shop and a gallery. And I've been to some shows in their space. But another thing they do that it's not like I have like an actual official connection with them. It's just, I'm just speaking from my experience with going to their events. It's not always in this art context of when we do things and bring people together, it's to show and sell art. they do community events where it's really just like, hey, Providence, let's see who all is here. Come out and let's see what's going on. We have activities and different ways that we can meet. That's really important to me because, like I mentioned earlier, being a Black artist, I had to keep a really like keen eye and ear in regards to curating because I'm trying to find out where I can get in. And so I've had experiences here in town and just, you know, other places. Anytime I'm in a museum, but like even at the museum at RISD where I don't wear a name tag that says I'm faculty, right? So I've been in certain spaces at the place where I work. When I first step in, the person who's working there is looking at me like, you know, are you lost or can I help you? Is there a thing you're looking for? You know, and, you know, folks can't see me, but I'm a 6 foot tall Black man with locks. And when I'm at work, occasionally I dress in like a soft cosplay at times. So like, you know, so anyway, it's that type of feeling that I think is really important to address in terms of like the comfort that one would feel when they're in these spaces, especially when you're trying to say, oh, we're an inclusive space. And not to, you know, put a dig on like these people that may be working at these institutions here, but like, it's a thing that I've heard from my own students and felt in other places around the country where it's like, okay, art is supposed to be this thing where everybody can come and enjoy, right? They tell you that it's like this place where come check out what we're doing. But if you don't feel like you're supposed to be in there for whatever reason, then it's not really saying what it's supposed to say. It's not really being what it's supposed to be.
I mean, are you saying that curation maybe should go beyond just the choosing of work around an idea?
Definitely.
But should also include what public and not private is doing.
Yeah, community involvement. Who are you? Do you know?
It's all about relationships.
Exactly. Do you know the people who live here? And then in that sense, you can actually curate from a pool that really represents the community. Because like you said, people are choosing the art of their friends, right? They're choosing the work of their friends. Or like just having their friends come through and being like, oh, this is the community of creatives in town. However, if you're never actually connecting with the community, how can you say you're actually knowing who the creatives in town are?
And I want to add it to a notion that I think one of the things that would be really dynamic in Providence is having shows including artwork from folks that don't live here. You know, Providence is it's a global city. Everybody's here. And literally, there's over 90 countries representing the people who live in the city, and over 50% of them weren't born in the U.S. And it's such incredible capital. We don't even know our city. That's the other thing. The opportunity that comes is that we can actually get to know ourselves through these kinds of projects. And, you know, I hate to put all the responsibility on any one individual to know the whole scheme, but that's where the collaboration piece comes in. You know, you make connections, build new connections, you meet new people, you constantly in a conversation about how, what the city is and how to reflect it back. Mm-hmm. And where are those spaces where we can as a community come together and start to wrestle a little bit with our circumstances.
You know what? That makes me think of something. Speaking of like a historical connection that may come with the creative scene or artists or creators that may be in town, there are organizations that have members who are artists and they're already doing these types of things. And these other places that may not show up in the galleries, but curating as well as creative expression doesn't have to be this thing that exists within the white box and you're putting these things up and people come in and be quiet and look at them. There are things like the House of Glitter. You heard of House of Glitter?
Yeah,
so the House of Glitter, historical fantasy dance opera. And they're starting their programs back up and they'll be doing things on Fridays again. And so these are the things that I think when we talk about knowing our community and being able to represent that from a curatorial standpoint, getting out into these places, that can be another way outside of just like, you know, an email list of like an open call. It's like if you're out into the community, you're going to run into artists at these spaces because people are making these connections from there as well. So it doesn't just end up being this friend list that you're grabbing names from and putting things out there. And I think that is the thing that's really important. And that's also speaking to like the rigor side of being a curator. It's like, what am I doing to branch outside of what I have been seeing or what I normally work with or whom I normally work with? The wider your, I would say your familiarity with your community, the stronger your curating will be. And that's from any standpoint. It works whether you're in the art context, whether it's in culinary arts, whether it's in fashion design, whatever it is that you're into. If your vocabulary is wider, you can pick and choose and do it in a creative way that's a lot more thoughtful.
Right. Spencer, I agree with you. And in some ways, while you were talking, I was thinking about how relationship focused my work was at Sky Gallery even. And right now, I'm not having relationships with anybody. I mean, you know, a lot of us aren't or haven't. And that sense of knowing is compromised. What I end up doing is I just mine all day on Instagram. I mean, it's a great immediate platform, at least to understand where artists are and what their voice looks like and what they're thinking about and how their work is evolving and people's reaction to it. And also seeing threads and themes of content, you know, where people are heading in terms of talking about, you know, what's happening and what life is like for them right now through their work.
I think the question of alternative space and digital media is extremely important in this moment, especially when we're trying to think about how do we connect ourselves to a community while distanced. And I think one of the central roles of the curator is to implement interventional tactics for how do we create new dialogues, new conceptualizations of not only space, but of social meaning and messages. And I think the role of social media moving forward is going to be crucial. You already have people curating digital exhibitions. We have podcast formats that are actually trying to articulate a different way of understanding art. You have, I believe it's ASMR, with these descriptions of what art looks like, what things feel like, what things could taste like. And I think this adds to a different sensory dimension of what curators have as an artistic and a creative resource.
Mm.
So I think in conclusion, I mean, thinking about some of the transformative practices that curators can use to expose historical and political conditions and realities. But I want to ask, as two new recent board members, how is PVD Curates hoping to stimulate a future conversation and a future of curating in the city of Providence?
Spencer and I are actually, I think we're the freshest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yes. Before Spencer and I came on, the board was in a process of kind of relooking at their mission and vision. And in the pandemic and the slowdown, the inability to gather and create spaces, part of it's really about the legacy of the city and the legacy of that initiative in saying, how does Providence Curates cultivate new curators? So I think the organization is going to a new phase of really trying to mentor and build a diverse group of young curators and curatorial teams around ideas of social and environmental justice. So, you know, we're here to kind of be in the mix of, I think, a new creative practice itself. And, you know, as we are as artists and as curators, but also in the education and the conversation around bringing folks into the mix and with the hopefully holding the same commitment that we have to looking at visual art, contemporary art in particular, as, you know, transformative social experiment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that mentorship part is really important in terms of those who are really trying to make their way in there and then trying to figure out how, you know, what is their curatorial voice? Because I think a sound mentorship is like a guidance type of situation where it's like, oh, I see you're working with a thing. Is this what you're trying to do? Let me try to help you form that into how you would like it to be so it can still be yours. But another thing is also to understand that these types of things have been happening already. You know, there's been a lot of curating already going on. The issue is perception of value. And I think part of our mission will also be to, you know, as much as we can, use what names that we have or what connections that we have to then shine that light on a thing that already has been existing so that whatever type of value that they've been missing or legitimacy that hasn't been placed on their name can then be there. It's going to take shining that light on all the other folks that aren't really getting, I don't want to use the word clout on here, but I'm going to use the word clout. They haven't gotten that legitimacy placed on their name. And so once that happens, we can see that curating can look a lot of different ways. And this idea of one being more valuable than the other is just an illusion, almost like a make-believe game in a sense.
For sure. You know, in addition to that, I think our mentorship will also include really practical tools, you know, how to think about it, how to create visuals, how to map out an idea. There's so many easy, tangible things I think that can help explode an experience. So I think it's a combination. It's about really allowing someone to blossom, but also giving them some tools and language to be able to have those experiences.
I love that idea of language in there, because that is definitely, yeah, a lot of times that's the thing that can separate someone from getting where they want to be. It's like, oh, I know how to do the thing, I just don't know what it's called. Once you get that language, then you can then give yourself a direction and to be exactly where you want to be. So yeah, that's a great way to put it, Johnny.
Yeah. And the other thing just to say is I think Providence Curates is just stepping foot into this mission with a commitment to Providence, to the history and the legacy here. And we're going to be learning along the way. And it's going to be, we're getting the same creative process, but we're excited. And we hope anyone listening will look us up and join us.
As a emerging scholar and curator myself, I'll say that I'm extremely excited for this opportunity to speak with y'all in the future, but I'm also just thinking about the way that Providence Curates lends an opportunity for up-and-coming thinkers and creatives to expand their understanding of knowledge and what constitutes knowing a practice or knowing artistic theory and artistic history or just history at large. And I think its mission is going to give us very much to think about in the future. And I just hope that Providence continues to expand, ignite, and invite a broader audience into some of the stories that have been subjugated for so long. Thank you both.
Thank you, Malene. Thank you, Spencer.
Thank you all.
This episode was produced by Dan Richards and Kate Dario. Our theme music is by Henry Bloomfield. Additional music by the Blue Dot Sessions. Thanks again to Judith Tolnick-Champa and to Malene, Spencer, and Johnny for the fascinating conversation. This episode was a co-production with Providence Curates and was brought to you by PVD Fest Ideas and the Providence Department of Art and Tourism. You can learn more about all these groups in our show notes. If you like this conversation and you haven't subscribed to Trending Globally, subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Trending Globally.